BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
On the Football Daily Podcast, this is the EuroLeagues with Steve Crossman.
Hello there, welcome to the EuroLeagues after an incredible week of quarterfinals across the board. So we're going to discuss the Champions League with Guillaume Balaguer and Julian Aron a little bit later on. We're going to start though with an amazing night for Atalanta, beating Liverpool 3-0 at Anfield in the Europa League quarterfinal first leg. Our commentary team was the former Liverpool defender Stephen Warnock with Vicky Sparks. And Vicky, just some wonderful scenes for Atalanta's players, their manager and their supporters at Anfield.
Unbelievable. Their backroom staff, their entire squad are lined up in front of those over 2,000 Atalanta fans who've made the trip from Bergamo in the lower tier away to our left. And those fans are cheering, they're singing, they're shouting, they're clapping. We've seen members of the backroom staff jumping around in a circle, hugging each other. This is a huge, huge night. And again, I take you back to that quote from when they won here in the Champions League group stage back in November 2020. Their manager then, their manager now, Giampiero Gasperini, Serie A's current longest serving manager, said then that that was the most prestigious victory in their history. This has beaten it, because this is a quarterfinal. Yes, it's Europa League and not Champions League, but still, it's a quarterfinal. They've never got past this stage, either in the Champions League or the Europa League. It's in front of a packed Anfield, which has rapidly emptied apart from those Atalanta fans away to our left. It's against the Liverpool side, who are pushing for the Premier League, who've already won the League Cup. It's an Atalanta side who came into this in a really poor run of form, and they have produced the performance of their lives, every single one of them tonight. They were as outstanding as Liverpool was shocking.
We'll come on to how bad Liverpool were in a second, Stephen, but I just want to continue to really congratulate Atalanta on an incredible performance and result. And you were talking in commentary about Gianluca Scamacca, and I was watching the same thing, thinking, this just does not look like the same player who was at West Ham last season. But I guess that is all about the coach Gasperini, because the same is true of De Ketelaere, who had an awful season at AC Milan before coming to Atalanta. You can see the impact on the individuals.
Yeah, you can, and it's about building confidence in them players, because they don't become bad players overnight. It's about giving them a foundation to play from and an understanding of what's expected of them. It's about getting teammates around you to understand the strengths of your game and playing to them strengths as well. It's exactly what he's done. I mean, one of the best performances I've seen at Anfield. I mean, it really was. I've been to some European nights where Liverpool have been outdone by opposition teams. That was hugely, hugely impressive. To come here and play the way they did and take the game to Liverpool and not fear them, outstanding.
Liverpool was so far off it. I mean, can you, if you're a Liverpool player, if you're a Liverpool fan, if you're the Liverpool manager, can you almost look at it and say, that was so bad and we were so far off the levels we know we have, just put that away and forget about it? I don't know how much there is to be gained by spending a long time looking back at that for them.
Well, you can forget about it as much as you want, but that's going to be the back pages of all the papers tomorrow. So that is going to be there. Then when Liverpool go to Atalanta next week, that's going to be brought up again. They're going to be reminded of it time and time again when this game's played out. And that's the issue is that you've got to go there next week and try and win the game 4-0 now. Mm. That's a big, big ask for any team to do. If it had been the other way round and this was at Atalanta, you'd have said, well, Liverpool can't be any worse. And especially at Anfield, you fancy them to overturn that. I find it very difficult to see Liverpool overturning this now. I know anything can happen in football, but this is, I mean, Liverpool were way off it. But to go and score goals against them, this Atalanta team's got goals in it. They create opportunities.
Liverpool's first defeat at Anfield since February the 21st, 2023, when they were beaten 5-2 by Real Madrid. So it has been a long time. It's been a long run, and it ends at 33 games without defeat. The other two issues, Stephen, are obvious. One, Jurgen Klopp had to bring on players at half-time that he would have liked to have given a rest to, and presumably he's going to need to start those players next week to give them any chance at all.
Yeah, 100%, and he's also got the game against Crystal Palace at the weekend to think about. Yeah, the only thing you would say out of it is that Diogo Jota got a good amount of time on the pitch and looked sharp at times when he came on. He probably should have done a little bit better with a couple of headers, but it's game time for him. However, you want to give people a rest, but you can't do that. And that's the difficulty about when you get to this part of the season. That's why it's so impressive when you see teams doing the treble or winning a double, because it's so difficult to be competitive in competitions right until that last day of the season. And it's been proven tonight how difficult it is.
Stephen, Vicky, thank you both very much indeed. Well, what a night that has been for Atalanta. Liverpool 0, Atalanta 3. Here's the Liverpool manager, Jurgen Klopp.
It was a really bad game. Oh, my God. So we started well, didn't continue. We just lost the plot a little bit, like we were everywhere and nowhere. Midfield was spread like that, right midfielder, left side. I didn't recognize it. That was really strange. But in football terms, that's tactical discipline. But anyhow, we had always had a big chance, I think, from Darwin, and then unlucky with Harvey. Then they scored a goal, and then we kept playing into their cards, to be honest, in their hands. So a really good example how it could have looked is the goal we score, because that's striker wide, fullback underlap in a massive space, arrives at all time in the world, pass the ball, and most scores a goal. It was an offside, but that's one thing. But I don't know, we should have had these situations more often. Then Diogo came on, he's now, just to make sure, we cannot use him now just because we think now he's the solution for whatever. He needs time as well, but he came on and just no bad experience or whatever in the whole game or for weeks and months, so just happy to play, and you could see that changed a lot. Eh? We played a bad game, we deserved to lose, and we must feel that now, but the boys have this night to feel bad about it, and then we have to build up again for the Crystal Palace game. Eh? So that's how it is. And nobody thinks at the moment. I mean, you asked me probably about the game next Thursday, but there's Crystal Palace in between. So congratulations, Atalanta. Really well done. That's it.
The Football Daily Podcast with Steve Crossman.
Guillaume Balaguer and Julien Laurent both with us. Good evening.
Hello,
good
boys. Evening.
Hello, hello. Where are you, Jules?
I'm at Villa Park.
Oh.
Yes, with Tom Gale next to me. And we saw a lovely, nice game in the Conference League between Villa and Lille. And I'm kind of glad because I picked up this Lille team before and I didn't want them to get spanked 4-0 here. And I thought they played well. They had chances. Emi Martinez was probably Villa's best player. So, yeah, of course, Villa still will have an advantage because they're a better team, even in back to France next week. But that second leg would be nicely posed.
Mm. Liverpool 0, Atalanta 3. My goodness, Gasperini just continues to upset in the best way possible, because he doesn't upset anyone, but he upsets a lot of teams.
Yeah, with very little every season, and with his best players disappearing and taking Atalanta to new heights every year. He's been helped today a little bit by Jurgen Klopp, it seems to me. Six changes feel a little bit too much. The team lacked balance. There was a lack of energy throughout the side. But Atalanta had a very clear idea that when Liverpool crossed the halfway line, they just didn't let them breathe. The bad defending of Liverpool allowed a lot of counter-attacking occasions, and they took advantage of it. I mean, they was looking at the stats. 11 shots from Atalanta, 11 to Liverpool in Anfield. That's really not good enough. And it feels like from now on, I think Klopp is going to have to put his best 11, not experiment, as quite clearly there's a bunch of players that right now don't seem to be at the best form.
I reckon, Jules, if Gasperini was definitely 10 years, maybe even 20 years younger, because he's 66,
yeah,
Everyone would be saying, oh, he's got to be in the Premier League. he's good. They've got to get him over here.
Yeah, and to be fair, you're right, it's too late now, I think. But you always wonder what this kind of manager, because he's not easy to work with. We know that he's not. You can see him on the touchline anyway, with referees, with all of that. But you wonder, because he's a bit of a genius, to be fair. Like Ian said, to be so successful. And yeah, of course, the last couple of years, 3 years, maybe not as consistently good as they were before, when they were in the Champions League every single season with a very low budget and selling their best players because they are selling club. This is what their business model is. And yet, this season especially, in the Europa League, Coop Miners has been a wonderful player for them this season. Scamacca, it must have been sweet for Scamacca to come back to England tonight after what happened at West Ham for him, what didn't happen for him at West Ham. And then, in a way, maybe prove some people wrong, because he's still a very nice clinical finisher.
Two goals at Anfield for Scamacca tonight. Only three in the Premier League for West Ham last
exactly,
season.
Exactly, yeah.
Which says it all, really. I mean, should we call him Gasperini one of the most respected coaches outside the Premier League, Guillaume? Is that fair?
Yes. There is a bunch of young managers in Italy, especially, that they seem to catch in people's attention. I think everybody's looking for a new Roberto De Servi. I'm thinking of Italiano, I'm thinking of Motta. But certainly, in terms of what he has produced already, you know, what he could do, Gasperini has got definitely the respect of many. Mm.
Why don't we do another manager question here, Jules, before we move on? And it's pertinent because West Ham were playing in the Europa League and lost 2-0 at Bayer Leverkusen. It was actually 0-0 after 82 minutes. They did well to get that far, and it's still a live tie for the second leg. I have seen Lille boss Paulo Fonseca, whose team you've just been watching at Villa Park, reports that he might be on a post-David Moyes West Ham shortlist. Do you think that is the case? Because you guys are all very well connected. And do you think it should be the case?
I think it is the case. And I think he's completely right to be the case as well. He's a wonderful manager, really. And the job that he's done at Roma before, at Lille as well. Again, with young players, with not much money to spend. You can't go and spend 40, 50 million on a player. So he has to work in a different way. But the way they move the ball. And even tonight, yeah, Villa are still a better team and they might knock them out. I don't know. But they were still brave in the way they played. They were a bit naive on the pitch, but his tactics were still very interesting. I thought when all season they've been like that. They're doing really well. He's got another year on his contract. I think if Lille qualify for direct Champions League for next season, so if they finish in the top three in France, he might be tempted to stay because the Champions League will be there, for example. But if there's no Champions League and a big club like West Ham comes, I think it might be difficult for him to turn it down.
He's been trying for a while to come to the Premier League, hasn't he? Mm. He has been interviewed for jobs. If I'm not mistaken, West Ham already
Spurs
has spoken
as well
to him, so I know him well. He got a common friend of ours as his PR man to actually remind us of all his successes. When that happens, it's because there is a plan. And the plan is, like for like so many other managers, to actually end up in the Premier League at some point.
Also, we talked about the defeat of West Ham and Liverpool, by the way. This is no good for the coefficient. And no, I don't want to go on too much, Steve, about the coefficient.
Know.
You know me. No, but really, the fifth spot now for the Champions League next season, with Germany, with Bayern drawing at Arsenal, Bayer Leverkusen now winning, Liverpool losing and really on the brink of being out of this competition, it's not good for English clubs.
No, it's not.
Is it Germany and Italy now?
At the moment, yeah.
I mean, Italy are going to get the extra Champions League space. Yeah, I don't think there's anything doubt about that. It's a question of Germany versus England. And I think the irony is, it looked almost certain that England would get the extra spot until we had these draws. And Arsenal drawing Bayern and Leverkusen drawing West Ham were actually the worst thing that could happen for Premier League clubs if they didn't win the ties. Now, they might win both of them, but who knows? But you're right, advantage
who
Germany.
Who said lions in winter and lamb in summer? Who said that?
Sounds
about
Shakespearean. Or maybe it was
I think
you.
It was Arsene Wenger, actually.
Or was it? Okay, well, same thing, same difference. Oh, go on, sir.
The Premier League takes so much out of the teams, then it gets to the stage and it's hard to keep it going.
Yeah, there certainly looks to be quite a bit of tiredness around. Let's talk about two incredible nights of Champions League quarter-final football. 10 goals on Tuesday. Arsenal and Bayern had that thrilling 2-2 draw at the Emirates. Manchester City, Real Madrid drew 3-3 in Madrid. Then on Wednesday, more goals at the Parc des Princes. Barcelona came out 3-2 winners and Atletico Madrid won 2-1 at home to Dortmund. Real Madrid 3, Manchester City 3. I'll tell you what I really enjoyed about this game, Guillaume. It felt like Pep Guardiola enjoying the chaos of it. You know, when he was celebrating that goal, he looked like he was loving the chaos of it, and that is so not Pep normally.
Do you know, I don't think there was nobody that did not enjoy what happened there, including Manchester City fans. Certainly Pep Guardiola. I spoke to him after the game and I had to congratulate him on the spectacle he's given us. And he was quite relaxed and admitting that there were a bunch of things that you could prepare in training and in the board, but trying to stop Real Madrid counter-attacking, it's like it's impossible. It's going to happen at some point. So of course, I did say to him, it felt a little bit like it was a player's game where five of the six goals came from amazing individual actions, nothing to do with tactics really. And he admitted that that was the case. So he defended his corner. He said, no, well, actually, I did a little bit. At halftime, told the players to actually not run so much. It was a lot of running. And he was like, stay put. The ball will get to you. And then you know how to attack the spaces. You've done it 100 times. So they had a fantastic FL, Manchester City. Fantastic second half. Brilliant second half. But this is Real Madrid. They don't need a lot to score, as we saw. At the Etihad, I think it'd be a different story. But in terms of enjoyment, I also spoke to Camavinga, to Brahim Diaz. They were all in awe of the game. It was just a very, very enjoyable match.
Yeah, pretty incredible, isn't it? If you look at the expected goals, it was 0.71 for Real Madrid, 0.72 from City, and they scored 6 goals. Just imagine of the quality. I mean, Valverde has scored amazing world-class goals before. He will do it again. Phil Foden, we've seen that. Left foot curler in the top corner. But for Gvardiol, of all people, on his wrong foot. I mean, already with his left foot, I'm not sure he can do it.
After
but with
the worst first touch I've seen ever. In a long time.
It's just incredible. And when you see a goal like that, you realise, okay, there's a lot of tactics that you can do, a lot of work, of course. And, you know, for Carlo Ancelotti to put Vinicius to be more central, Rodrigo on the left, that was great. And it worked. For Pep to respond, like Guillaume explained, the way he did, that was great. And they never panicked, neither of them too, and neither of their players. But when you see a goal like the Vardiol one, you say, OK, this is a very special night.
But it's interesting what has happened in the last year since they met in that famous semi-final, that 4-0 at the Etihad. How Real Madrid realised that the way things were going had to change, that Modric cross was not the solution anymore. They actually, since then, they played only one game. It was a defeat against Atletico Madrid. They haven't started a game together since. It was a change of guard, no doubt about it. And you could see it in the way that Real Madrid pressed. They had, I think it was 53% more pressing, running to do with pressing than they had done the previous year. Similar to what they did 2 years before when the famous Rodrigo moment and when they turned the tire around against City. But what I'm trying to say is that Real Madrid now is not the same Real Madrid as a year ago. They can go to the Etihad. They won't lose 4-0. They won't be beaten in the same way. Certainly City have got Walker back. They will have De Bruyne back. But Real Madrid have become a modern team, as competitive as always, especially at the Bernabeu. The noise, by the way, was also increased with the roof being closed spectacularly. All that helped, yes, but City is still, in my eyes, a favourite.
Kind of want to ask a Phil Foden question here, and I know it's the EuroLeagues, but believe me, it's from a European perspective. Do you guys think, Guillaume, that going into this game, would Foden have been the player that Real Madrid fans, Real Madrid media, the Real Madrid manager Carlo Ancelotti would have been most aware of and most cautious of and thinking most deeply about how do we stop them? Because obviously in this country, we're talking about him now, even by his own high standards, more than ever.
Isn't it 21 goals and 9 assists?
Something like that.
Something absolutely crazy. He has to be talked about as a superstar already. And I tell you more, if they didn't have Rodrigo, who, again, in the big games, he seems to grow in stature. Vinicius, who, as Jules has said, can play almost as well wide than he plays in the middle. And, you know, Jude Bellingham, say, and Mbappé coming, that would be next. It could be another one of those players that Real Madrid would be interested in. He has been in covers of newspapers already. He is talked about, of course. But the thing about City, in Spain anyway, I don't know what Jules thinks of this, it's Pep's team. Overshadows a lot of what happens because his work is to give collective answers to the team that's finally finalized by the talent of the players that he's got in his hands. Obviously, Haaland is the most talked about of that squad. But then you start scratching, looking deeper, and it's like, De Bruyne wasn't missed, was he? Because Foden, even though he plays in a different position, closer to the edge of the box, more of a threat to the rivals, he certainly has filled that gap, and De Bruyne can rest longer if he wanted to.
De Bruyne should have started the game, and Foden would have played wide because Pep doesn't play them both as tens. I don't think you can play with both at tens, and you don't know what kind of game Foden would have had if he had played wide like he did against Arsenal, for example. Like he's done recently when him and De Bruyne, and it's a debate that we've had, Steve, on Premier League Sunday, on the show on Sundays. You don't have to pick, of course, because they're two amazing players. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that you don't get the same from Foden, obviously, if you play him wide and if you play him centrally. He said that after after his hat-trick against Villa the other day when he plays as a 10 and De Bruyne was on the bench, and he said, I don't have the same freedom wide, I don't have to do the, I can't do the same things, and that's what he's good at. And obviously, De Bruyne being De Bruyne, he will also have to be in that position. So it'd be fascinating. I don't think for them we play this weekend in the Premier League because he got a knock and they need him for the second leg at the Etihad. So De Bruyne, who didn't play in Madrid, will play this weekend. But it'd be very interesting what happens at the Etihad.
But going back to the question, you're right. I think that's what you're suggesting with the question, which is that Follan is not talked about with the level of admiration than others do. And as I said, maybe it's got to do with the fact that he's overshadowed by Pep, by the team, by Haaland's fame. But I think he should be talked about at that level. Jules, you feel that...
Well, I think you will now after that goal, won't you? Yeah. Outside of England.
Yeah. We talk about him in France, to be fair. But he's still young. Don't forget, last season he didn't start any of the knockout games for City. Mm-hmm. You know, he was not the start. He was not the key player, really. He was amazing talent-wise and potential-wise. But this season really feels like it's the season where he goes to the next level. And let's hope for England and England fans and Gareth Southgate that he reproduces that at the Euros for England as well. But no, in France, you could see that his reputation is growing and growing.
Tell you what, another thing that occurs to me talking about Foden, no marketing campaign around him. I don't remember seeing him in advertisements. And that has got an influence in how you would get perceived all over the world. Maybe the stats now make his team think that he should be treated in a different way in the eyes of public opinion. But I don't think he fancies that much either. But there's others that have got, you know, a bigger name because of what they sell.
Another young English player scored a great goal. Bukayo Saka opened the scoring in that Arsenal 2 Bayern Munich 2 game. I don't want to talk about the non-penalty at the end of the game because I'm absolutely amazed that there is anybody who thinks that was a penalty.
I completely agree with you.
Unless one of you two want to disagree, which is fine.
No.
Thank goodness for that, because I can't be bothered.
neither of them, by the way. Neither of the two.
Yeah, even the handball. Yeah, even the Gabriel one. Let's not talk about that.
Well, now you've mentioned the Gabriel one, I do want to ask one very quick question about it. Did you have sympathy with Thomas Tuchel, who was only really angry because of the explanation, which is like, look, this is a kid's mistake. Come on. I'm not giving a penalty for that. Because I think the flip of it, Jules, is if you do give a penalty for that, I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it?
You can't give a penalty for that. And I know it was maybe a bit stupid from Gabriel. Maybe he didn't hear the whistle. I don't know. Maybe there was confusion. I don't really mind, to be fair. You can't give a penalty. And Tuchel knows it. And Tuchel is better than that. Tuchel doesn't have to show that kind of anger and give those lines because he knows exactly. He's been in this game for too long, really. And I was a bit disappointed, really, from him with that kind of answer. Even if the referee did say, you know, it's a kid's mistake or whatever, come on. And Bayern played well, and Bayern are still very much in this tie. It's a draw to take back to Germany, to Munich. I just don't think he needed to have this outburst.
Now, he could have actually smiled and, yeah, he was, but he wasn't. No worries. He would have won lots of brownie points. But advice to referees next time it happens, do what a Spanish referee did when Sergio Ramos, not knowing what was going on, did that thing of kicking the ball and holding it with his hand, but the referee haven't given anything inside the box, right?
Yeah.
Clear penalty, yeah?
Okay.
Referee goes like, free kick, there was a free kick before.
I mean, that so would have been hard on the Gabriel one.
Yeah.
So, and nobody said anything because it's like, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, yeah, that would do.
In the end, who do you guys think is happier with that scoreline? Because on the face of it, you would assume Bayern Munich 2-2, they get to go back. Is that fair, Jules?
Yeah, I think Bayern have to be. Even if you look again at their goals, the way Arsenal gifted the first goal especially, it's a lovely move to finish it. But the mistake by Raya, Gabriel, all of that is just too obvious and too naive at this level. You should not see it. There was a lot of very positive things from Arsenal. A young Arsenal team, let's not forget. Yeah, of course, Havertz, Jorginho, Gabriel Jesus, Zinchenko, they've been in this competition a lot. But for Saka, for Saliba, for Gabriel, for Raya, for White, not the case. For Rice, so this is still a young team, and you could see there was maybe a bit of nerves. I think they got a little bit carried away after the Saka goal, after the first goal, very early in that game. And against a team like Bayern, you can't really get carried away because they've got enough experience and players. And I said before the game on French radio, this was also a lot about experience this game. We could say, yeah, Arsenal are a better team this season. Of course they are. Bayern in crisis, Tuchel leaving, all of that. But those games, as we saw in every tie in the Champions League and even tonight, a lot is down to experience as well. How you manage the pressure, how you manage the tension, how you manage your own emotions. And I think there was a time in this Bayern performance where they looked controlled, they knew exactly what they were doing, and I think the experience that they had, far greater than the Arsenal ones, made a difference at some point.
Two games to get through. We're going great guns. PSG 2, Barcelona 3.
We don't have to talk about
three.
This. We don't have to. We don't have to.
PSG 2, Barcelona. What's going on, Jules?
I missed it. I was out. I was there walking the dog. And
you don't have a dog.
I don't have a dog. Oh, my word. I mean, that team. I was just so excited going there, being on the pitch. Before seeing everyone, great atmosphere, great weather in Paris. Just and then I saw Luis Enrique's tactics, and I was like, I'm not sure about Asensio as a number nine, as a false nine, because not because he's not good, he's a good player, but because he hasn't played for a while, I'm not sure how fit he was. There was no Hakimi at right back. I was not sure about Marquinhos at right back to replace Hakimi either. And I thought Barca were good. They were good in the first half. They played long on Lewandowski, whose hold the play was outstanding. Rafinha was good. Lamine Yamal was very good at helping Koundé and Araujo to defend on Mbappé and Nuno Mendes. So there was a lot of good things from a Barca point of view. And then Luis Enrique, which I expected changed everything at halftime, pretty much. And then it was much better from PSG for 15 minutes. I was on my feet, celebrating, going crazy. And then Xavi responded really well. And I think you have to say that Xavi won the tactical battle with Luis Enrique on the night.
Now, Guillaume, this is the question I know you want to be asked. So I'm going to set it up for you on a plate. Why have Barcelona got better since Xavi said he was leaving?
It's 9 wins and 3 draws since he said that. And something has changed. I heard the likes of Frankie de Jong, Rafinha, Joao Felix saying it's got nothing to do with Xavi saying he was leaving. In fact, him coming out with that was a little bit of a surprise. Even his coaching staff didn't know that was coming. He was tired. They just lost against Villarreal. But a bunch of things happened since then. One, I think Xavi was heard by the accusations of Lewandowski that the training wasn't good enough, wasn't sharp enough, wasn't intense enough. They changed that. And when you do that, it takes 4 or 5 weeks for it to affect the team properly. We've seen it now. Because in the games after Xavi announced his departure, the game of Barcelona wasn't, the performances weren't great. Now they are. That's one. Two, I'm going to say to you, I'm not doing the show anymore. Bye.
Oh, why? What? Who? Don't do that.
Well, it means then you, Jules, and you, Steve, will have to do with everything. Everybody will look at you. Everybody will be saying, will be hearing what you have to say. You won't be able to hide anymore. You won't be able to throw anything at me because I won't be there. So that's what's happened in the changing room of Barcelona.
Oh, that's better.
Xavi says.
I was very confused for a second there. I briefly thought that was it, which would have been a shock.
Well, that's it. And look, all of a sudden, you were looking somewhere else, and now you are... Look at your body language. You're all tense now. All ready for the next question.
That's because the EuroLeagues definitely wouldn't get better if you left, unlike Barcelona under Xavi. So that was why I was concerned about it. Jules, before we move on from this one and touch on the last game... You obviously only go to big PSG games. You're not sort of one of the real fans that goes to lots of them. So you might have thought about this. Might you have seen the last of Mbappe in a PSG shirt?
In the Champions League at the Parc des Princes, yeah, because he will play next week in the second leg. But yeah, and
yeah, but you won't be there, will you?
Yeah, I'm going.
Are
of
you going?
Course
no,
I'm
okay,
going.
Fine,
I said it yesterday on the television as well. This could well be his last game here in the Champions League at the Parc des Princes. I don't think people really realized it at some point. I hope for him it's not, because otherwise this will always be remembered as his last game, and that was terrible from him. It was bad. He felt disconnected to the rest of the team. He had 3 shots, none of targets, hardly dribbled anybody, lost the ball a lot, didn't win any duels, nothing. It was just not him. He didn't turn up, and I think it's a real shame. So I hope for him, almost like if I was a PSG fan, that was not the last Champions League game at the Parc des Princes.
Don't forget, Koundé was absolutely brilliant, and Araujo, yeah, keep an eye on him. So that was also Barcelona making him feel invisible.
Very true.
Which leaves us with Atletico Madrid 2, Borussia Dortmund 1. So Atletico's record, they've still not lost a home knockout tie in the Champions League under Diego Simeone. That Haller goal, though, Jules, keeps it interesting, doesn't it, right at the end?
Yeah, yeah. And Julian Brandt, who came on at halftime, we should have started, really. I'm not really sure what Edin Terzic was doing by starting Nemshan and leaving him on the bench, but he made a big difference when he came on, and he created that goal. Well, he was part of it, and then he even hit the woodwork right at the end. Again, that leaves us with a lovely second leg, nicely poised, where Atletico will have to be, would be the favourite, of course, because they've got that advantage. And Dortmund are not very good, let's be honest. But with the fans on their day, they can go and put a lot of intensity, and they will make mistakes because that's what they do. But they can also create some danger against them. So fascinating. Those four ties in the Champions League, amazing first legs, and we all can't wait for the second legs.
And we've managed to find enough time to squeeze in one answer on Athletic Bilbao winning their first silverware for 40 years. They'd lost six Copa del Rey finals previously in a row before victory over Mallorca at the weekend. Amazing scenes on the barge, enjoying themselves. They've been all over Bilbao, which of course is a wonderful part of the world anyway, San Sebastian, and their manager Ernesto Valverde Guillem loving life. And will he stay there now?
Yes, I think they've been talking tonight and to the media, and he's saying it's easy. They just say stay, and I will stay. But what an opportunity for him to now use this platform, yet another one that he's had in his career, to actually do something else that's big. He was interviewed by for the Manchester United job when Ralf Rangnick got it. To keep the team temporarily in, you know, stable, and then maybe look for Ten Hag, basically. He wasn't chosen, but I just don't know why his name doesn't appear more often for Liverpool, for Manchester United, for those kind of jobs. Partly it's down to the fact that he hasn't got the personality that tells you constantly, I'm great. And in fact, he has said, if you don't get an offer, just take pictures. He's actually a very, very good photographer. So he does have ambition, but perhaps not that ambition to actually be considered one of the managers in the world. It has to come from him as well. I think he is, and I think he will stay. But I would have liked to have seen him, for instance, taking over Klopp at Liverpool.
Mm. Well done, everyone. That was a great half hour. I feel like that was like a EuroLeague's high press. There was a lot of energy going on tonight. It was great fun. Jules Guillem, thank you very much.
Thank you, boys.
Cheers.
And that is it for this week's EuroLeagues. The next episode of the Football Daily will be 72 plus as we cover all things Football League. So don't forget to tune in for that. And as always, thank you so much for listening.